This hour of First Up, powered by Manscaped. Live on your radio, live on TSN1050.ca and the iHeartRadio Canada app. It's First Up for your Wednesday morning. A very quality day ahead in the city of Toronto. The weather is beautiful these days. Well, a high of 14, which is great. I'll sign up for that any day. And I also sign up for everything we saw yesterday down at Scotiabank Arena, Carlo. I'm Aaron Karolnik. That's Carlo Koliakville. Again, Buster Rolney in about 20 minutes. And Dave Poulin at 7:45, a man who was a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs executive team not that long ago. So he understands the inner workings of Maple Leaf sports and entertainment, how messaging is portrayed in the media, and we know how important that is historically for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And that was on full display yesterday. They took, I think, an extra day to try to figure out how they were going to relay the messages to the media. And we heard some somewhat interesting comments from guys like Brendan Shanahan and Kyle Dubas. And let's begin with Brendan Shanahan. And there's a lot of people who believe the Leafs, Carlo, should make changes for the sake of making changes. And Brendan Shanahan not in that camp.
There's always going to be new faces. That being said, we will not be making changes just simply for the sake of saying that we made changes. With that, I think that, Kyle built a very good hockey team. I think he made excellent adjustments along the way. And I think Sheldon is an excellent coach. As we look forward to next year and getting to work toward next year, I think it's important to sort of state that I see both of them as being extremely important in getting us to the next level, so that when we do approach next year and we do come back, that we are ready to take that next step.
Does that surprise you at all, Carlo?
It doesn't, because that's what I expected to hear. But I'm also not surprised they didn't tip their hat. Like, if that's something they believe that they're going to do, great. If that's something that they don't believe they're going to do, they don't need to share it with all of us, right? I kind of find it, mind-boggling, the fact that, you've sort of accepted the same fate so many years in a row and still think that you could believe in this group to change the narrative next year. Now, there's still a whole off season to find out if everything that they said is true. Let's be honest, in everything that they said yesterday, the last thing that they wanted to do was be called liars about it, right? So, do I think moves are going to be made? Yeah, I mean, I think there's smart hockey people that work in Leafs management. And as much as they came out yesterday and said all the right things, I do believe there's going to be hard discussions made. And I didn't expect anything different than what they said yesterday.
Yeah, after the loss to Montreal last season, Brendan Shanahan said this: "I'll say this about our top four. I think any team in the league would love to have any of them, but we want them, we like them, we want to keep them here." This was last year. This year, yesterday, Kyle Dubas said this about the core group: "I look at the core group as a whole and try to determine what's the best way that we can move ahead with trying to accomplish our goal and reaching our potential. And if there's a way that we can improve the team and become a better team, then we'll do that." I guess that's kind of a change in messaging. But here's a problem with trying to parse through these comments and understand and try to rationalize what they mean. It's all about what you can do with another team. You can say, go out, and the Leafs could make the determination this morning, like, you know what, we're going to explore trades for William Nylander. We're going to explore trades for John Tavares or Morgan Riley or Jake Muzzin. But that doesn't mean you're going to find a taker. And it also doesn't mean you're going to find a taker who's able to give you the assets in return that would make sense to improve your hockey team, or even a lateral move at best. So it's pretty simple to say the Leafs should go out and change their core. The Leafs should go out and move this guy or that guy. But you need to have a partner in that move, right? I mean, it's easier said than done.
And I don't think they'll have a hard time finding a partner. Obviously, they've got a lot of cap maneuvering to do. There's going to be changes just because the cap's going to present that to the Maple Leafs next year, especially if they want to bring back Jack Campbell, who I think you know, their goaltending situation has to be a priority. But, you know, I want to listen to Shanahan's clip of Killer Instinct, because this is something that we still have seen doesn't exist with this group.
The process, to me, what makes me feel more encouraged, doesn't take away my disappointment, but what makes me feel more encouraged was that it was a completely different approach. So we're still seeking that killer instinct, but we were doing a lot more of the things that you need to do in order to get that job done than I've seen in the past couple of elimination games, where I felt we looked a little bit on our heels. I thought that was a big change. And it's a matter for us to keep encouraging them that when they're doing the right things, to not get frustrated and move away from those. And we see room and areas of improvement as well, and we will address those over the summer, and we'll address it over the course of next season.
So he said something in the words of, you know, that we're still we had a better effort in game 7. And what bothers me about that is, are you basing the result and the situation you are because of how much better you just played in game 7? I mean, if you evaluate the series as a whole, we saw a lot of the same things that have hurt this Maple Leafs team all year or the past playoff series. I mean, just go back to game 2. They handed that game to the Tampa Bay Lightning. Go back to game 4. They didn't even show up to play. Go back to game 6. They couldn't protect a one-goal lead in 20 minutes. And you want to sit there and just praise the fact that you played better in game 7? There still has to be an evaluation of how you played throughout the series. And yes, don't get me wrong, they played good throughout the series. But again, he still said they're missing that killer instinct.
What is that even? to close out a series. But do the Leafs really lack a killer instinct? Like, is that a quantifiable thing that you could determine that if one team has and one team hasn't? I guess you look at their performance in elimination games over the last 5 years or 6 years, and that would exemplify. I guess they lack the killer instinct, but I mean, maybe they lack good luck as well. I mean, I think you could argue that in Game 7, that penalty call on Justin Hall, or even going back to Game 6, where Alex Kerfoot had the high stick on Hedman that led to the 5-on-3. So I get where you're coming from, and I get where Brendan Shanahan's coming from, but the killer instinct is something that I kind of struggle to figure out what that even means. It's an ambiguous term that...
Okay, but I'll tell you the perfect example. You want to know what killer instinct is?
I do.
Go back and watch the third period of Game 6, and the Maple Leafs protect the lead, and go back and watch the third period of Game 7 and watch the Tampa Bay Lightning protect the lead. Just watch Game 1 of the next round between Florida yesterday. Did you see how Tampa played?
Tampa played exceptionally well.
Tampa basically said, you know what? We don't need to go head-to-head scoring on you. We'll play a boring style of game, and we'll trust our star players to capitalize on your mistakes. That's killer instinct. Because every bad penalty that Florida took, Tampa Bay made them pay.
Yes. Oh, we saw that yesterday with 3 power play goals for the Lightning, and just a magnificent performance from Nikita Kucherov, who I don't know what was going on in the series in round 1 for Kucherov and his performance, where he was okay. I mean, he wasn't, you know, Conn Smythe Kucherov, not that Kucherov, I don't think, no, it was Hedman and Vasilevsky the last 2 years, but Kucherov had 30-plus points the last 2 postseasons, one of the great playoff performers of this decade. But I don't know what was going on with Kucherov, but, I mean, it's pretty obvious the way that the Toronto Maple Leafs look at their roster going forward, and Kyle Dubas talked about the group and keeping everything together yesterday. Here's what he had to say.
It's my job at the end of every year to evaluate whether we can improve the team. And if there's a way to improve the team, which involves someone who me or you or anyone would constitute as the core, it's my job to investigate that and determine whether it will make us a better team in the short run, long run, and then whether we want to do that. So that's the way that we'll handle the offseason. Maybe I've felt in previous gatherings like this that it needed to be more adamant because of the way that things had gone or different circumstances around some of the players at those times. But the way that I'll approach it is we'll sit down as a management group, look at our whole entire roster, similar to the question Steve just asked, look at who's available, what can we bring in, and our whole goal is going to be to make the team better.
There you go.
Not surprised to hear that.
But and we also don't know. Like last offseason, maybe Dubas did explore a bunch of different things that we just don't know about, right? I mean, you could say something at a press conference and get a phone call that fundamentally changes the way you thought you were going to proceed, right? I mean, who knows? And we saw how pissed off Dubas was at the trade deadline when that leak came out that he and Kyle Davidson, the GM of the Chicago Blackhawks, were talking about Fleury and Hagel and a potential trade with Matthew Nyes and Mrazek going the other way. He hates that. He hates when leaks emerge. So to go out and say, oh, at least attempt to make fundamental changes last season, we don't know. And we also don't know what they're going to do this year, what type of conversations they're going to have with their best players. So I think it's going to be a very fascinating offseason. I still believe there will be significant change. And let's be also honest, there has been significant change, just not to the core of the roster, the highest paid players. Think about the goaltender changes that have happened over the last couple of years.
When you say significant impact.
Sure. Impact. I mean, again, significant is a word that you could have your own interpretation of, but Freddie Anderson was a goalie for the Leafs for a long time. They moved on from him. Jack Campbell comes in. Think of the D from this season, even from a couple of years ago. It's completely different. So they've made a number of moves. To this point, hasn't paid off. And I don't necessarily buy everything that Shanahan and Dubas were selling yesterday with regards to how they believe in this team in spite of the same results. And if I ever hear, by the way, that quote, insanity, the definition of it is doing the same. I'm so sick of seeing that. I hope it never emerges again. Is that the real definition, by the way? Who came up with that definition? Yeah. Is that from Webster's? I don't know. But in any case, I am so sick of that. And
the other comment that really irked me a little bit yesterday, and again, I don't want to sit here and dissect everything that people say, but William Nylander had something interesting to say yesterday on Game 7s, and it really just made me raise my eyebrow a little bit and say, what?
It's hard. We've been in a lot of Game 7s where we come out on the wrong side, and I think we're slowly understanding the way we need to play is more so like Game 6 where we just came out when we came back there and just keep pounding the puck and stuff like that. I think is something that, I mean, it's hard to do in that kind of situation, but that's kind of how you have to play.
Slowly understanding the way we need to play. How many Game 7s do you need to understand how to play in a Game 7?
At least one more.
I mean, does that not surprise you to hear something like that?
It does.
You're slowly understanding the way you need to play in a Game 7. A Game 7 is a one-winner-take-all game. You should learn your lesson after one Game 7. I mean, look, I don't want to sit here and harp on William Nylander, but there's a reason why they haven't won the big game 6 years in a row. Because if you just lost another one and that's what you're saying, what is it to understand? I mean, I don't get it. Like, to me, that just reaffirms everything I believe about this team, is that they are not capable of winning the big game when it counts. Not team, this group, as good as they are, because they are good, they're really good. But this group assembled to the way that it is, together, it's not capable. And you can't tell me otherwise. You can't fool me otherwise, because I go based on what I've seen, and that's it.
And that's the only thing you can do, right? I mean, it's results. The process is nice. It's great that you have 115 points. It's great that you have 57 wins. And it's great that you take Tampa all the way to seven games. And again, Tampa looked really good last night. 4-1 win over Florida in the in the first game of the second round. And that was a very impressive performance by Tampa. Without, I should mention, Braden Point, who missed the game, arguably Tampa's best forward. I mean, Nikita Kucherov has a pretty good case as well. But that's going to be something that we'll be tracking throughout the morning. Dave Poulin, our hockey analyst, will join us in about a half an hour. Coco, you're done for the day. You're a busy man, so we'll catch up with you later this week. Joining us next, Matthew Cause, the host of Gameplay, one of the most handsome men in sports media, and my good friend. Looking forward to having Matt with us for the rest of the program. And Buster Olney will also join us in about 5 minutes. First Up rolls on here on TSN 1050. First Up rolls on this Wednesday morning. Aaron Karolnik, and coming in from the bullpen, Carlo playing the role of Jose Barrios. 7 shutout innings last night. Matthew Cause. I think I called you Claus.
You just mispronounced my last
name. Matthew Claus. You know, it's fitting.
You got caused by
an early Claus. I'm just going to stick with Santa Claus.
Ho, ho.
For you. You are Adam Simber. You close it out. Adam Simber in for Jordan Romano, who's got a non-COVID illness. But the Jays, very sharp pitching performance once again. You say Kikuchi last night, or 2 nights ago, and last night it was Jose Barrios. And Matthew, man, he's been much maligned. ERA in the fives. That's a big start for him. He needed that one.
Yeah, you could say that about both. Actually, Kikuchi isn't pitching well. He had 2 good starts against the Yankees. But no, you're right about Barrios. I believe his ERA got knocked down by almost an entire run in that performance. Hey, you know, it's great when it's not Houston and New York and these other teams. It's now Seattle and then the Cincinnati Reds. It's W time for the Blue Jays.
That's right. That's right. It's time now for the keyword of the day for our Fill My Ride contest. Your chance to win hundreds of dollars in gas money. Every weekday around this time, we give away the Fill My Ride keyword of the day. And when you hear the cue to call in about an hour, the number is 416-870-1050. Today's keyword of the day is Jimmy. Jimmy is today's keyword of the day. I guess Jimmy Butler, who had a huge performance last night for Miami.
We'll get into that in a sec. I'll just say, oh, my God. No one could have seen that third quarter coming where Miami blew out the Boston Celtics.
If there was one man who could have seen it coming, it's our next guest. He is ESPN MLB insider and guy who can see into the future. It is Buster Olney back on First Up. Hey, Buster. That's great.
Good morning, Buster. So, we'll try to.
So, Matthew, I don't know if you're aware of what's going on at TSN 1050 these days. The phones do not work at any time. They just have to be – Chrissy has to go reset them. And anyway,
they work for gameplay. Like, I got to tell you, it's been smooth sailing. It's been smooth sailing.
It's possible Buster's line dropped. I'm not really sure. But this is a very fitting start to our guest segments here on TSN 1050.
So much great stuff to get to. If you think of me as your guest, I'm coming in loud and clear.
Yeah. So are we resetting the phones, fellas? Can someone let me know what we're doing? Or, man, no one's seeming to listen. Like, I don't know.
Well, let's go back to the NBA.
Sure, yeah, sure.
While we're waiting for Buster Olney, the Jimmy Butler conversation, I wish that was an interesting one because it was almost like he was the lost superstar. Everyone rightfully so focused on Tatum and then before that on Giannis and all these other guys. And Jimmy Butler's been as good as almost any of them in the playoffs. We just don't talk about him as much. And he got it done yesterday, like 41 points. And he destroyed the Boston Celtics, especially in that second half.
You make a really good point about Butler, and I was talking about this earlier with Carlo, how he was probably watching that series against the Bucks and the Celtics and all the praise heaped on Jason Tatum and, of course, on Giannis Antetokounmpo. Rightfully so. Those guys are incredible players. But so is Jimmy Butler. I mean, I don't know if he's in the same class as Giannis. He's not. Could be in the same class as Jason Tatum. I mean, the way Jimmy Butler's been playing throughout this postseason, he's been incredible. Absolutely incredible, because Miami's been doing it for the most part without Kyle Lowry in the lineup, and Jimmy Butler has been the focal point of that Miami offense. And last night, 41 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals, 3 blocks. talk about a stat-stuffing performance and the 22-2 run that Miami had to start the third quarter. Butler's incredible, and I think he has a right to feel a little bit jaded by those conversations about who's the top dog in the East. Is it Giannis? Is it Tatum? Is it Kevin Durant? Or is it Jimmy Butler, who could stake his claim with an amazing postseason, one that he's already had so far?
And a couple other stats to add to that. That game last night, he went to the free throw line 18 times. 18 times against a very good defense in Boston. His third 40-point game of the playoffs. Only player averaging 25 points on 50% shooting in the playoffs. So those are the stats. Now we'll put the stats aside for a second. What happened 2 years ago? Miami went to the finals. Jimmy won one of those games against the Lakers basically on his own. When we consider what is a star, you know, sometimes it's not quantifiable. Same thing with Killer Instinct with the Maple Leafs. I heard you and Carlo talking about that. Well, it's simple as this. Who's the guy who gets me to the finals? Who's the guy who can win a game on his own in a high-end playoff game? Well, that's Jimmy Butler. He did it 2 years ago. He's been doing it this year. He left Minnesota because Andrew Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns are losers. Like, you know, he looked at Philly. He's like, wait a minute, this Ben Simmons guy? No, give me, I don't want to be with that guy. And all he's done, wherever he goes, is he wins. It's just, Miami doesn't get as, they don't get as much attention, which is odd because it's the city of Miami. And maybe it's because, you know, they beat Atlanta and they're not that good. And they beat Philly with, you know, that team was hurting. But, you know, Jimmy Butler, again, reminded everyone, I might not be, you know, Giannis, Luka, but I'm on that next tier, and I'm near the top of that next tier.
Matthew Cause with us for the duration of First Up this morning, Karolnik and Cause. And I think that's spot on, Matt. And when you think about what Miami did last night, we should mention that Boston was without Marcus Smart, who's got a foot sprain. His status a little murky going forward. And Al Horford in COVID protocols. I believe that was the explanation they gave. So Boston was shorthanded, and they were coming off that very, very tough seven-game series against Milwaukee. Imagine trying to guard Giannis for seven games and then showing up a couple of nights later and then having to go up against the gritty Miami Heat team. Probably not a recipe for success, and maybe we should have seen game one coming. And Boston was up 8 points at half, right? I mean, it was one of those things where they kind of fell by the wayside in the third quarter.
That's a great point. No one saw it coming. Boston had 62 points at the half. They shot 59%, and then, boom, here comes the third, and they get outscored 39-14. No one saw that coming. And by the way, AK, you know who did see it coming? You're looking at him. Everyone bet on the Celtics to win the series. I looked at them. Like, there was no value on the Celtics. I took Miami at plus 143. So for the people out there that don't bet, that means you bet 100, you win 143. And I took Miami. I do it like every 12 times I give a plus minus. I just give a little thing. I took Miami. They were the number one seed. They're a deep team. They got a better coach. And I know everyone took Boston. Go look at ESPN, The Ringer, The Athletic, other TSN blogs out there. Everyone took Boston. But no, I'm going to take Miami because I figured they would win game one because of everything you just said, AK. And then it would go back and forth. And I will take the home team in game seven unless it's led by Devin Booker, Ayton, and Chris Paul.
Oh, you could find Boston at plus 125 now to win the series after being, what, minus 150, minus 160 to start the series. So perhaps some value there. We're going to try Bustarolny. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to try Bustarolny on the other side. And again, Dave Poulin, our hockey analyst on Leafs Locker Room Cleanout Day and whatever Nikita Kucherov had for breakfast yesterday, really paid some serious dividends. He was incredible in Tampa's 4-1 win over the Panthers to start their second round series in the Battle of Florida. Bustarolny, I hope, next. A very fitting song as we await the return of our phone lines here at TSN 1050. I'm begging that they work because I love speaking to our next guest, one of the best in the business. He is ESPN's MLB insider, Bustarolny. Are you there, Buster? Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I can't believe it. Wow,
I was going to play the role. I was going to play the role of Bustarolny, but I don't do a very good Bustarolny impersonation.
No, I feel if you do a Bustarolny, it could come off as a little bit rude. Not that that would be your intent.
No. It'd be nothing but complimentary. The guy's a champion. He's one of the best. He's actually When I'll give you a little clue here, AK. When I'm prepping for my show, I'll go on the Twitter account. I'll go on the First Up Twitter account because you guys cut every interview. And so, you know, for Big Leaf days, you know, I'll cut like, okay, I'll hear what Drager has to say or Poulin. But when Buster's on, I always want to have a listen. Even if I don't use any of it for the show, he's always good. Actually, can I rant about something real quick about
baseball? I love it. Go ahead. You got lots of time.
You know who's on the injured list right now in baseball? You know who's on the injured list? Clayton Kershaw. Remember they're like, oh, we gotta pull him out. We can't go for history with a perfect game. And he'd thrown 80 pitches. And it was like, oh, no. We got to be careful. He still went on the bleeping injured list. That's ridiculous. We got denied history. I mean, no one throws a perfect game anymore. It hasn't happened in ages. And he's thrown 80 pitches. And he's gone through 7 innings. And they take him out because they're being precautionary. And he still gets hurt.
Yeah.
Good. Well, Dodgers.
Exactly. I don't know the injury that Clayton Kershaw suffered. Is it an arm injury? Probably, right?
I saw it in passing that he's going to miss some starts and that he's out. And my first thought was this is karma. Karma, Dave Roberts.
Yeah. Or you could look at it the other way. I mean, he would have suffered the injury even earlier than he ultimately did. He's getting up there in the years. One. I mean, Kershaw, one of the great pitchers of our generation. We know that, but for him and for the Dodgers, who were so dominant, such an incredible roster top to bottom. A game in mid-May for Clayton Kershaw, not a top of mind for the L.A. Dodgers. I think we can agree on that. And, you know, I still find what they did. It wasn't even Dave Roberts, just in retrospect. It was more Kershaw. He was worried about his body. Maybe he knew something that he only had so many ticks left in that arm. And
now, you go back and look at the presser. He was being a good soldier by saying, no, I don't want to play. They made the right move. They already done all the winning. They've already done all the money earning. They've already won the World Series. At this point, don't you go for history? I mean, at this point, don't you go to do something you've never done before? Hey, you go and you go for the perfect game.
You know what's a real shame, Matt? It's a real shame that Buster's not joining us because I'm reading an email that he sent to us. I've got a really, really interesting superstar name brought up in relationship to the trade market, and a rival exec brought up two teams he thinks are most likely to pursue this player, the Padres and the Blue Jays. I want to know who this player is. So, Arad, please text Buster. Find out the information so we can relay we'll it to the audience. Who do you think this player is, Matt? Any guesses? Superstar player in relation to the Jays. Could it be Joey Votto?
Is Joey Votto a superstar player?
No, I don't. Maybe he was. I think he's hitting 150 this year.
Yeah.
Maybe he's not. Listen, that's a good point.
It'd be great if it was Joey Votto because he could come on with us and we could chat about our old high school. We could get Bob Weeks. We could get Gurdeep. We could get former Prime Minister Stephen Harper. And we could all just sit around and talk about the Richview Rams. We'd have a great old time.
That's it. You know, that's I'm sure Ross Atkins is listening right now. He's like, all right, let's pull the trigger on that deal for Votto. Cause needs the Richview stuff. But yeah, it was a good night for the Jays. I mean, a 3-0 win. Jose Berríos with 7 shutout innings. The night after, Yusei Kikuchi goes out and throws 6 shutout innings. And the Jays have had such a tough schedule in the early part of the year, completely contrary to what the New York Yankees have faced. And I mean, the Yankees are having an incredible run. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I'm not trying diminish what they've done. But the Jays have faced the Yanks and the Sox and the Astros, a bunch of great teams early on. Now they're getting into the lighter part of their schedule in May. They've got Seattle, who's, you know, pretty average team at best. They've got the Reds coming to town. That's what we call guaranteed win night or afternoon down at the Dome. The Reds are an abomination of a baseball team. So maybe this is where the Jays pitching can kind of give the offense time to build up that, like, whatever's going on
all year.
Well, it's been really weird how they haven't gotten the bats going yet, and they will. These guys are way too good, Vladdy and Bichette and Springer and Gurriel and Teoscar. I don't need to name off all the guys who haven't been performing up to relative to expectations, but the pitching right now with Kikuchi and with Berríos last night might be giving them a little bit more leeway as far as, all right, we haven't figured it out yet, but the way the pitching's carrying us, well, we can sustain ourselves until these bats get hot, which they inevitably will.
Yeah, and by the way, not even really that hot yesterday, and all the scoring was done by George Springer. I think it was just like a triple in the second inning, scoring 3. But you talk about the pitching. Scott Mitchell threw this out on Twitter, our baseball guy. Over the last four starts, spanning 23 and two-third innings, Jays starters, their ERA is 0.76. That's pretty damn good. You know, we saw great stuff from Gausman. We saw great stuff, but just the offense wasn't there. It was great stuff from Alek Manoah, and those guys were kind of undone by no offense and some errors. It was won by Matt Chapman. By the way, if you're a broadcaster, how much were you loving last night's game? 2 hours and 20 minutes. I always joke about this, is that I feel bad for the announcers who do Yankee games or Red Sox games that are always like 3.5 hours. Like, you want to be in the National League, and the sweet spot as a broadcaster, 90s Atlanta Braves broadcaster.
Oh, Tom Glavine on the hill? Cha-ching.
Yeah, Maddox is on the mound. It's like, guys, make that dinner reservation for 8:45. I'll be the one at the bar waiting for you guys, because game is done. I'm already there ordering a drink.
Yeah, you start the decanting process at first pitch, and then 2 hours later, you're sipping on that first glass of Pinot Noir. Sounds like a delightful
evening.
Smoothed
out those tannins.
Dave Poulin, I think, is going to join us. I'm hopeful. Again, I don't want to promise anything.
I got it on FanDuel. It says here that Poulin joining us, it's at it's at minus 220. So if you believe Poulin's going to join us, if you bet 100, you win 220. So it's in your favor. It's a great value bet right now. I think the main thing we want to talk to Poulin, I mean, there's a ton, but I heard you guys talking about it, and just and people yell and scream about Twitter, because that's what they do on Twitter. Just killer instinct. Like, what does that really there's some things you could always quantify. Hey, we got bigger, faster, stronger. Oh, how can you tell? Well, watch how quickly I can go from one end to the ice to the other, click. Or I'm better, you know, this guy's a better scorer, and you're looking at their shooting percentage and the angles and all these things. But killer instinct, is it just as simple as this? They lose all the important playoff games, so they don't have it. It's just as simplistic as that.
I don't know. I don't know how you define that. And Brendan Shanahan. I can't speak anymore. I'm all spoken out, I guess. I used all my bullets earlier in the program. But Brendan Shanahan used that term with regards to his team and how they don't have it at this point. Is that something you develop? Is that something you're born with, or you win a playoff round and maybe everything fundamentally changes with regards to your killer instinct? Dave Poulin, he knows killer instinct. He's had it. I mean, whether he was the captain of the Flyers, play with the Bruins, play with the Washington Capitals, so many postseason games. He's going to join us next for Leafs Breakfast here on TSN 1050.
This is Leafs Breakfast.
Well, there's always changes. You know, whatever management decides is necessary for the team. But obviously, we think we have something really special here, a tremendous players, tremendous people, and especially with how close we were and the type of team we had and the good things from this season. Obviously, you want to have another crack at this group.
That's Toronto Maple Leafs captain John Tavares at the Maple Leafs locker room cleanout day, an annual tradition here in Toronto following another first-round exit. Of course, the players, and by the way, Aaron Carolla and Matthew Cause with us this morning, as Carl is away for the rest of the morning. I mean, we'll get him back tomorrow. But I feel like if you're a player, and I mean, Dave Poulin, he'll join us in just a second, Matt, you want to run it back with your boys, right? I mean, the Leafs had 115 points. They won so many regular season games. They were that close. Of course, you don't want to blow it up, and maybe Austin Matthews or Mitch Marner sees things a little bit differently. But I think Tavares' opinion on this team, this roster, is pretty uniform. How do you feel about that?
I got to tell you, the logical side says, of course, you run it back. You look at the talent. You look at their age, their accomplishments. Everyone had personal highs. Everyone can still get better. Greatest regular season. However, because it's – and Tampa's an incredible opponent. All these things we've all said. But considering it is another year in a row, and I'm at a point now where if you said to me, okay, they are going to trade one of the core four, maybe it's Nylander. Or maybe it's Matthews. Maybe it's Martin. Maybe it's any of them.
Don't trade Matthews. That'd be a bad idea.
I'm just saying, if something massive happened, I would not be as pushing back on it as I would have been, just because of the fact that the results have not gotten there. That's all.
All right, let's give it another shot. We've had some issues with our phones this morning. Dave Poulin, TSN hockey analyst, are you there?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Yeah,
Poulin.
I can also play the role of Buster Olney if we want some baseball.
Oh, fantastic.
Love it.
Right into it. I'm a little concerned that there were odds coming out on whether my call would go through or not.
Yeah. Well, it's nothing to do with you, Dave. I mean, it's an internal problem here.
I think you're just trying to create a platform for Matt to do another commercial and just say, you know what? What are the odds of actually getting through to this guy?
That's right.
And guess what? Poulin, you paid off. You paid off for everyone.
Everyone
is winning money this morning. Thank you, sir.
Finally, the locker room exit meetings cleanup is pretty close to status quo around the league. If you go and read the morning papers at any city, you'll read a lot of the same comments. Guys know what each other say, and they were incredibly frustrating. I've talked in the last, week or 10 days as things wind up for teams around. I've talked to both coaches and managers and, guys who played for me who are in the business now are coaching. And exit meetings are generally the same everywhere, guys. First off, everybody loves their team. Everybody loves their teammates. And I think that's a credit to the people that play the game and what they go through in hockey. And I do think they're very close, and I do think they love them. If you want a real flashback, go to the Minnesota Wild when they picked up three players right around the trade deadline. They picked up Nick DeLorier from Anaheim. They picked up Jacob Middleton from San Jose, who's a very interesting guy. And they picked up Marc-Andre Fleury. And all three just raved about how great the Minnesota Wild locker room was and how tremendous it was. And it was the closest locker room they'd ever been in. Now, they're coming from teams that had real struggling years, and so that's step one, in San Jose and in Anaheim and Chicago. And they want it to be better where they're going, and they want to think they have a chance to win. So, you're going in with the rosiest colored glasses on you could possibly have. And, and this was a team in Minnesota that was built for the long term and built, blah, blah, blah. Well, they lost in six games in the first round, but everybody still likes each other. And there's a situation where maybe it's okay if somebody, if there's a little friction in that locker room from time to time and a little more challenge in that locker room from time to time and a little less comfort in that locker room from time to time. And that's something that you really have to consider as a manager and whether the ingredients are right to create that lack of comfort at the immediate time that you need it, where guys are willing to challenge guys in situations. Everything isn't always great through the course of a year. Everything isn't always great through the course of a playoff run. And I know even talking to, and I have talked to a couple of head coaches in the last couple of days, and talking to coaches, they'll tell me, Pooley, it's different now. You've got to handle players differently. I get all that. But at the critical time, you're not on the ice with the players, and when they're being challenged at the most critical times, they're not coming through. And you look and you say, how do you develop killer instinct? I think one way, when we see a team like Tampa guys do what they just did, I look at how long that group has been together for the most part. And if you go back, the first draft pick on that team was Alex Killorn in 2007. And then they literally added one every year. Every single year they added at least one key piece. And except for 2013, when they drafted Jonathan Drouin, but they traded him for Sergachev. So that gets to be a 2013 piece. And you look in not just a piece, but maybe a couple of pieces. One year they got Vasilevsky. Another year they got Kucherov and Palat late. But, as you go through and you add a Braden Point, you add an Anthony Cirelli, you add a Ross Colton, and maybe that's the best example, guys, Ross Colton. Here's a kid from New Jersey. He was playing in the USHL for Mark Carlson for a couple of years. Then he goes and plays at Vermont. For Kevin Snedden, not a hockey powerhouse, not, Michigan or BU or one of the, great hockey powerhouses. Then he spends 130 games in Syracuse. Now, I'm watching Ross Colton play right now. He's a fourth-round draft pick. Guys, he looks like he has killer instinct to me. winning goal in the Cup Finals last year. He scored again last night. I think he's had 3 or 4 goals in the playoffs this year. Now, where does that come from? Does that come from coming up to the organization and watching and learning and doing it the right way? And so a lot of these guys spent time in Syracuse and Howard Dolgan. That's not even a team in Syracuse they own, guys. That's an individually owned team in the American Hockey League that Tampa sends its players to. But they do it right, and you know, and they develop whatever ingredient you're talking about. They seem to develop, and you look at it, it's frustrating to watch from the outside. But right up through 2017, from 2007, they added at least one player every year. I think say maybe 2010. So it's an interesting aspect to look at. You don't go out and buy those players at the deadline. You add, like they added a nice addition in Nick Paul and Brandon Hagel, but you don't add that. The heart and the core, it has to grow together. And I think that's a real challenge for the Leafs, because the way they are built, they have to change players every year. And a lot of players every year, because financially, you can say walk this team back. Guys, they can't walk this team back. They can't. I mean, that's just pure numbers and dollars. They can't bring this team back next year. And it's a nice thought, but you can't. And if you could, and you could leave it together for 3 or 4 years, then that's a different story. But each year, because of the way they're constructed, they have to change the number of players.
You mentioned about comfort, and I think there is a relationship between comfort and killer instinct. And I feel like that's kind of what needs to be done, is to shake it up. And the analogy I give is that when you're at home and you look at a full-length mirror and you're like, oh, God, I got to go hit the gym, that's where the discomfort is. But if I'm at an all-inclusive resort, you know what? I'll hit that gym next week, because right now I'm comfortable. I got a pina colada, and who wants more jumbo shrimp? And I think that's the problem with the Maple Leafs, is everyone is a little bit too comfortable. And also they're comfortable because they're really good. They're really talented. But we keep seeing what happens at critical games in the playoffs.
Well, what you want to do as an organization is create the perfect place to play. And in many ways, the Leafs have done that. I mean, every single support, everything you can spend outside the salary cap, every single cent you could spend to make things the best they can possibly be, they've done. From support staff to quality of people, medical staff, training staff, every single aspect of it, absolutely the best. These players are given everything they can possibly imagine, I mean, to succeed. But here's a question I would ask, you know, and in the exit meetings, and this is an interesting one. Are you going to watch games moving forward in the playoffs this year? Mm-hmm. And what do you think the answer will be? Some guys will say, no, it's so frustrating, there's no way I can watch it. And I'd say, watch every game. Watch every game and be pained by it and put yourself in those situations. And be mad that you're sitting on a beach somewhere instead of, you know, don't escape and eliminate it and say, I'm not watching it, I'm so mad. Watch it and get mad. And be mad that Ross Colton's scoring last night. And be mad that Tampa's playing last night. And put yourself in that game against Florida. And imagine what you do. And then watch the next one. And then watch the next one. And watch Colorado figure out a way to score in overtime against an undermanned St. Louis team, maybe or maybe not, and watch teams win on the road and watch what it takes, because, you know, the norm, and it goes both ways. Early on when I lost, I was very fortunate. I had a lot of playoff success, but when I lost, initially I escaped, and I was given that advice. Don't escape. Make yourself watch it. Make yourself follow it, and make yourself understand that what you've done isn't good enough. And I'd be interested to ask that question and see what the answers were for a lot of guys, because I know a lot of guys, their method is to escape and not put themselves through the pain. Well, there has to be some pain here, guys.
Our guest is TSN hockey analyst Dave Poulin.
Great answer, by the way.
Of course.
Like Dave Poulin. Always great answer. Like a family feud when someone gives the great answer. All right,
so I also enjoyed your...
So just go look at this aspect. Now, this may be over the top for some people. Brady Tkachuk is in the stands in Calgary watching his brother Matthew. And you'd say, well, that's because it's brother Matthew and the whole family's there, and his aunts and uncles and kids on his shoulders. And what do you think Brady is going to bring back from that experience? And, you know, and as he hates that he's not on the ice right now. He might be going out and playing road hockey with the kids. I mean, he might be. And, you know, and some people say, well, you know, how can he do that? Well, if that's part of his family structure, put that over there. I mean, I'm not, you know, and that's wonderful that he's supporting his brother. But it's not easy for him. It's not. You know, he'd rather be on a beach in the Riviera or wherever he may be, but he's not. And so it's just, it's an interesting sort of study in human nature and what you're going to put yourself through. And because everyone says the right things on exit day, guys. Everyone is going to spend more time at the gym. Everyone knows what it takes. Everyone's, you know, got a great summer program. Everyone's going to get right back to work. I can just tell you, I've sat in them as a player. I've sat in them as a coach, and I've sat in them as a manager. And every single one is great. And so you had to go to your way as a manager to make it not great. And we did. And you know, with a lot of players, you have to make it uncomfortable because, you know, life of a professional athlete that's, you know, getting 115 points during the regular season through the most part of the regular season, it's pretty comfortable.
Dave, you mentioned your time as a manager. You were executive with the Toronto Maple Leafs for a number of years, and Brendan Shanahan and Kyle Dubas, they have bosses, right? MLSE, the board, they look at what the Toronto Maple Leafs accomplished, didn't accomplish, and let's be honest here, a trip to the second round is worth a lot of money to that company. And of course, Bell and Rogers and Larry Tannenbaum, they comprise Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, that ownership group. In your experience, what was the messaging from top down from MLSE and how they have input on certain decisions? Like, would you expect Shanahan to hear from Larry Tannenbaum, to hear from members of the board about their opinions, or is this more of a hands-off situation? Shanny, we hired you to do your job. You brought in Dubas. Dubas brought in Keith. We'll let you do your thing. Or is there any pressure points from higher up above Shanahan?
There are pressure points. They're held accountable, guys. I know, you know, when Brendan comes out yesterday and you know, says he fully supports his group, you're assuming that's the final line. That's not the final line. I mean, he has bosses and they're held accountable. And even the way, you know, we can't assume the way that it's portrayed to the press yesterday is the exact way it went behind closed doors. And I mean, don't assume that. Don't assume that Brendan Shanahan, you know, doesn't have intense, lengthy conversations that get very heated with Kyle Dubas or Kyle Dubas having with Sheldon Keefe. That's what managers do. And, in many ways, they put a lot together, a lot of really good aspects with this hockey team. It's a really good hockey team, but it's not going to stay the same. And, you know, you have to figure out the challenges to figure out. The easiest steps are from, you know, where a team like, I don't know, take any team in the league and take, you know, a Detroit or a Buffalo is right now and take that next little step to get in the playoffs. That's the one that's easiest to perform. The final steps are the hardest steps. I mean, we're watching that firsthand. But I believe, you know, and some of the people are the same at the very top. I believe there is full accountability. And as much as you know, they say we really like the team and you know, we really believe in it, they're questioning, you know, behind closed doors, they're questioning both each other and they're questioning what they're going to do moving forward to make this better.
Is the number one move now, in terms of pressure on management, to convince another team that maybe Peter Mrazek could work out for them because the Leafs have got to re-sign Jack Campbell?
Guys, you can move any contract in the National Hockey League.
There's one you can't on the Leafs.
Okay. So there's no move clauses, but we've watched no move clauses be moved. We've watched no trade clauses be moved. If you're willing to pay the price, you can move a contract. Now that's the question. Are you willing to pay the price that, you know, that is demanded of it? Because there's a price that goes with moving it, Matt. That's, you know, you can move it.
Yeah.
But there's going to be a price move. Like, you're going to say, can you find a team? If you picked up the phone, you started at 8 o'clock this morning, can you find a team to take Peter Mrazek? Of course you could. You could. And you could say, well, no, you couldn't. He's, you know, he's got multiple years left and he was injured, but you could find a team to take him. There'd be a price to pay with it. you know, here's the contract to Peter Mrazek and here's the asset that goes with it. And you make it attractive enough that somebody takes it. Now, that's costing you, but you can move it. you know, if you want to move it, you've got future assets, you can move it. But there's going to be a price, and the price gets high, and you wonder if you have the currency to pay the price to make up for that. That's the question.
Well, I mean, it wasn't long ago that Peter Mrazek was a very highly sought-after free agent goaltender. I get he had a terrible year with the Leafs. He was injured, and when he wasn't injured, was not performing well. But are we certain that the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I get the salary cap situation is a major issue, especially considering they might have to pay Jack Campbell upwards of $5 million per season to stay, but like we're certain that they have lost all faith in Mrazek, or is there a possibility that, again, like we've seen the Leafs do before, continue to run it back and maintain faith in the guys that they have signed and have trust in? Maybe Mrazek's part of a tandem with somebody else, whether it's Jack Campbell or another goaltender. Any possibility of that, Dave?
Well, the questions you're asking yourself, Aaron, are the same ones the Leafs are asking themselves. What changed between last year in late July when that contract was signed and now? Well, now you've had almost a full calendar year to work with the player. You know more about him. You know more about both his on and off ice persona, maybe how he handles injuries, maybe some of the training he's done in the past that haven't put him in the best position. I mean, I don't know. You know, I don't know Peter Mrazek, but you've got a lot thicker book on him now than it was possible to have because you've worked with him. And so, you know, whoever made the exact final decision on that, there's more than one person involved. Your goalie people would be involved. Your scouts would be involved. All of the positives that were on the left side of the ledger that said, we have to sign Peter Mrazek for 3 years at $3.8 million. Have some of those changed? He's 30 years old. Have some of the ones on the right about some of the concerns you had in the past come forward. And so that's the homework you do now. And he could very well be part of the, you know, if you answer the questions and the questions, you know, come out and the left side of the ledger says, look, we still believe in this guy, then you still believe in him. But the problem is financially. You know, you signed him when Jack Campbell was making $1.65 million. So you had, what, five, math major, $5.45 million in the goalie position. That might be right, actually. So what are you going to pay Jack Campbell? And it's going to be more than $1.65 million. And can you afford to have $3.8 million in that equation? So there's a lot of grinding in math. And I know math, Maddie, you love math. And there's a lot of grinding and math to be done. Now, I will say, I think they have the best cap guy in the league in Brendan Pridham. And you know, the way he can manage it is remarkable. It's absolutely remarkable, but there's a tremendous amount of work to be done. And it starts probably at the goaltending position from a numerical standpoint.
Dave, as always, we appreciate you doing this for us. I don't know if we'll be doing Leafs breakfast next week when you join us. Maybe it's, you know, lightning breakfast or avalanche
playoff
breakfast.
Just
Stanley Cup playoff breakfast.
Playoff.
But we still get two games a night, guys, and it's great. I mean, it is great. Now, four games a night every night.
Yeah.
Those first 2 weeks, that's a lot of hockey. And, you know, and I watched my multiple screens going, and I watched all of it. And it's a lot of hockey. Two games a night is much more manageable.
I'm with you. No doubt. Less things to bet on, but aside from that, it is more manageable to watch.
Yeah,
well, you already won a bet this morning by me making a call. So
that's right. We're up.
We're in the green, baby. Let's go. Thanks, Dave.
Have a great day, guys. Enjoy the hockey.
All right. That's TSN hockey analyst Dave Poulin. Man, the Jack Campbell situation, a very, very intriguing one.
It's the number one issue for the beyond finding, you know, a cup of killer instinct that all the players can swill back. It's about Jack Campbell.
Do you feel that? I mean, let's say 5 days ago, there was this perception that Jack Campbell, oh, he'll be back next year, 100%. Like, why wouldn't? He's soup. Like, of course he's gonna sign at a reasonable number. At least we'll be able to figure it out. And something switched after Game 7, where it's like, ooh, Jack Campbell, I don't think they can re-sign him. It was a conversation we never had. I wasn't thinking about it at all. I just kind of was under this
assumption. Well, you know why? Because of his attitude and his positivity and how and just how much he's like, he loves everything. He loves the moment, the team, the organization, the players, the city, his cat. You know, like it's so he had all these things, and then that sort of took you away from the financial reality of this guy's 30 or 31. I might be off by a year. He's never had a massive payday. This is it. This right now, this summer, is his generational wealth earning time. So yeah, there's the possibility of them not being able to retain him is certainly out there. That other team's gonna swoop in that's got a much better salary cap situation than the Maple Leafs.
Let me put it this way for Jack Campbell. His career earnings, $5.7 million.
All right.
That's pretty good.
Before taxes, agents, well, exactly. Lawyers, da-da-da-da-da.
What do you think Mrazek's career earnings are, Matthew?
Let's see. So you said Jack is 5.
5.7, yeah. What do you think Mrazek's at?
I'm going to go Peter Mrazek has made $23.5
million. $20.1
million
for Peter Mrazek.
But so. I went over, so if this is Price is Right, I lose.
That's right. Congratulations. There's the buzzer.
Chris.
Spin the wheel, Matthew. Buster Olney is going to join us on the other side if he takes our call.
I don't believe you.
Buster Olney, Ed Jovanovsky, and Rich Beem in the same hour. If you leave your radio, you are a crazy person. That's all coming up with Karolik and Cause here on First Up. This hour of First Up, powered by Manscaped.